happens, do all states do this, where the rules of civil procedure apply to these hearings, then I think, you know, you're probably fine with that without having to, you know, get into more specificity. Because I, from what I heard, I think it's absolutely right that people will have an opportunity to seek more time if more time is needed, to present evidence, and that would probably routinely be granted.
Yeah, this is Mark Dent. My main problem is with that last sentence that says each party shall be allotted the amount of time that was requested to present their case, end quote.
Right.
And I think that brings us back to Kevin's suggestion. After this has all been fleshed out, each party will be allotted a reasonable amount of time to present their case. That gets the point, that addresses the concerns to some degree. So I'm not sure that language would be sufficient.
Maybe we can amend that and come to a vote, but I have to say that when we run out of time in my court, we continue it for another day. So rarely ever have told the defense that they have to stop, even in a civil case. So people are given the time necessary for all the reasons that Judge Riggs mentioned. I like Judge Hardy's proposal on bifurcating the sentencing, but maybe that's something we got to do separately. If you're defending your reputation and your life and your pension, and you didn't want to admit you did something wrong, but now you've been found to have done something wrong, that's going to change what you're going to say. And I think people should be allowed to do that. So let me make a proposal, Justice Peregrine, and what's here now, and see. I would move to amend the second sentence to each party shall be allotted the reasonable time necessary to present their case. And that way the commission still gets to make that decision. And with that amendment, I would move to approve the two sentences as they are with that amendment.
Okay, did everybody understand the amendment? Any questions on it or further discussion? Okay, is there a second to this motion? Judge Riggs, you second?
Yes, second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay.
I don't know. Well, I'm not running this. I don't know if Judge Hardy wants to propose we add that sentence that encompasses his idea there.
I think my impression is he wanted to explore it.
Yeah, I'm really inexperienced in this format. So I'm bringing in my criminal justice experience, and I would really like to hear more from Paul and other commissioners, you know, kind of offline from this experience. But I can tell this commission that what Justice Hardesty said resonates with me and is provides an element of fairness that I would want if I were a judge accused of misconduct. And so I'll take it back to the commission and learn more in the future. I don't know if we need direction from this commission.
I think it's an idea worth considering if somebody's livelihood is being considered to be taken away from them. If it were going to be something like a public reprimand, you probably wouldn't need another day. But if they're considering a suspension or a removal from the bench, it seems like that's way more serious than a public reprimand or something like that.
Okay, very good. Let's move on to page 17, rule 27. Kevin?
And Justice Peregrine, I'm not quite sure how this became the Kevin show. I think I'm not sure how that happened, but.
Well, I thought you put the reconciliation together and.
You told me that. So
yeah.
I did not volunteer. Okay.
Okay.
Here we go. So this is kind of another website thing that we would add in orders of dismissal. We would add, it shall forthwith prepare and file this order publicly dismissing the charges against the respondent with the Supreme Court of Nevada. Said order of dismissal ought to be published on the commission's website within 48 hours of filing. So it's kind of a fairness thing. If the charges are going to go up on the website immediately, it would seem to be fair that the dismissal goes up on the website immediately.
Okay. Discussion on this recommendation. Does anybody have any issues? Okay. Is there a motion to approve this recommendation?
Move to approve.
Second?
Second.
Okay. All in favor? Aye.
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 Anyone opposed? Okay. Let's move on to page 18, Rule 21.
This is the one I mentioned, Justice Hardesty, that I think he kind of spoke in favor of. This just adds to the witness rule that remote testimony of witnesses shall be permitted. I think that would fix a couple of problems we've had in the past. I'm sorry, Justice Hardesty.
No, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Judge Higgins. I did want to qualify that to a degree. The rule is that on a showing, as you all know, we have a rule in place that allows someone to seek the handling of a witness virtually on a showing of good cause. And that would be my request, is that the language be modified, that it still be on a showing of good cause. I'm sure the commissioners, like any other trier of fact, would like to assess the credibility where possible in person in an evidentiary hearing. But when you've got an out-of-state witness or maybe an out-of-district witness that or has someone who's involved in having to take care of child care or some other commitment or a father in a hospital or something, I think that cause can be shown, and the presumption would be that they would be allowed to testify virtually. So I think it's not all witnesses would testify virtually.
If that's a friendly amendment, I would offer, upon a showing of good cause, the remote testimony of witnesses shall be permitted.
Okay.
Yes.
Everybody understand the amendment? Any further discussion? Okay. And Kevin has offered the amendment. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay. Page 19. Procedure 2, motions.
I think thankfully this is the end of my obligations today. This is to address a complaint that we had heard from some judges that pretrial motions weren't being considered before the hearing. And then when we met with Mr. Dyla, he did point out that sometimes those pretrial motions aren't received until the day before the hearing, which poses another, unsolvable problem. So the proposal would be that the commission shall rule on all pretrial motions filed 60 days before the hearing, at least 14 days prior to the hearing. So that would give people 2 weeks before the hearing. Pretrial hearing motions shall be afforded oral argument in public unless the parties stipulate otherwise. The parties and the commission members shall be permitted to to appear remotely for any pre-hearing motions. One thing Mr. Dyla did point out was having a separate panel meet in person before the commission meets to consider pretrial hearings is an additional cost they can't afford, just to get everybody in the same place. So I thought perhaps that would be a good venue for a Zoom hearing to decide the pretrial motion. So that's the proposal that I think addressed most of the concerns.
Okay, is there any discussion? Paul, you're muted.
I know that I'm not a commission member, but may I speak on this issue?
Yes.
So as Judge Higgins noted, the commission always rules on pre-hearing motions that are filed on a timely basis. The only time they don't is when the motions are not submitted on a timely basis. And our pre-hearing orders sets forth those deadlines, okay, clearly in its pre-hearing orders, which you have copies of. The other rule where it says here, a proposed rule where pre-hearing motions shall be afforded oral argument unless the parties, and I stress parties, stipulate otherwise, as this has been established, the commission is a court, and the commission is being stripped of any discretion in this respect to have According to this, they must hold oral argument, and that is not the case in any court in the state. And to my knowledge, any court in the country, the courts always have discretion to determine whether an oral argument is necessary. And sometimes we'll have 50 pre-hearing motions submitted to the commission prior to trial. And I just cannot see the necessity of having a hearing on every single one. So I would just propose for consideration by the commission to for the commission on judicial discipline to retain discretion as any other court in the state.
Yeah, what other discussion on this? Years ago in the district court, when we do motion calendars, Mark, you remember this. It used to be you'd have every motion argued. They'd come in, you'd have 200 attorneys sitting in your courtroom on a Monday morning. So we went in and determined, at least when I was civil presiding, determined that there's a whole host of motions that don't need to be orally argued that aren't dispositive motions. So to me, that struck me as being a little inefficient if you had to argue every pretrial pre-hearing motion. So other thoughts on this?
Well, let me just jump in briefly. If this is the commission's practice and it's pretrial motion or hearing order, I don't see the harm in putting the deadline in the rule. And that way, everybody knows ahead of time what the deadline is. They don't have to wait for that. They know they got to get those things filed 60 days before the hearing.
Right.
And I'm sure counsel fell down a mine shaft and broke his leg. You could do that the day before. But otherwise, the kind of motions that are civil procedure motions could be heard in advance. One complaint that's been made to me is, and I don't have any stats to prove this one way or the other, is that sometimes they aren't decided in advance. And decisions to be made on a defense can't be made because they don't know if a particular witness is going to be allowed to testify remotely, for instance. And so they're kind of, people are on pins and needles till the hearing starts. I don't have any problem with amending that oral argument sentence to something else. But I just think it's good to have in writing what the deadline is. That argument can be had. I mean, maybe the parties can request oral argument. I'm sure if there's a case with 50 that you aren't going to have oral argument on all of those. But I think in most courts, upon request, motions are heard on oral argument. So I think there should be an opportunity for that. And I think allowing everybody to appear remotely so that you don't have to fly the commissioners to Elko to have a hearing would make sense.
Okay, so how would you word that? Again, the only issue I had with it was the pre-hearing motion shall be afforded oral argument.
How about the commission shall consider the request of the parties to, let me work on the sentence, but shall consider a request for oral argument on pending motions.
Upon request, the commission, shall consider oral argument.
What about the parties may request, either party may request oral argument, but that doesn't mean it'll be granted, but they can make that request.
Absolutely. I think that's a reasonable.
But I also think it's important that there's a deadline for ruling on the pre-trial hearing motion so that both sides can be prepared depending on what the rulings are.
What about that sentence that's still there that says decisions on motions shall be made without oral argument unless otherwise ordered by the commission? That language is still there, right?
Yeah, it is.
Well, we'd have to delete that then.
Well, we could just tweak that.
Yeah, or tweak that sentence to say,
you could just say may be made.
Okay, how about this? Decisions on motions may be made without oral argument unless otherwise requested by a party and ordered by the commission.
I think that makes sense.
Yeah, it puts the onus on the party to make the request.
Right. And that way you don't have to automatically schedule it every
day. That's right.
You'd have to wait for a request.
And it leaves discretion with the commission as to
whether right.
to have the request.
Yeah. Okay, so we would be taking out the sentence, pre-hearing motion shall be afforded oral argument in public unless the party stipulate otherwise.
Yes.
That's gone. And the sentence above would be amended to decisions on motions may be made without oral argument unless otherwise requested by a party and ordered by the commission. How's that?
Good for me.
Okay. And so the first part of the rule change, I haven't heard any objection. Rule on all pre-hearing motions filed 60 days before the hearing and at least 14 days prior to the hearing. The parties and the commission members shall be permitted to appear remotely for any pre-hearing motions. Okay, so with that amendment, does everybody understand the amendment? Do you want to go through it again? Or you got it?
I'd like to hear Paul's thinking about that.
On the oral argument?
Yeah, just as to the amendment to the amendment that you proposed.
Yeah, as long as it seems as the commission has ultimate discretion to order it or not, but I think it reads, you know, it seems to be fine not to presume what the whole commission will decide, but it looks as if, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the commission ultimately retains discretion on this issue.
Right, that's the way it reads with the amendment. It's the way it's intended to read. Okay.
May I ask who presides over the formal hearings? Is it the entire commission? Is it a retired judge who is asked to preside? Some combination of some part of the commission? How is it done?
It is the entire commission, all seven commissioners, and
okay.
Among those seven commissioners is a presiding judge that is appointed by the commission, and it could be either a judge or an attorney on the commission, the regular commissioner, that serves as presiding judge for purposes of pre-hearing motions, et cetera, and evidentiary objections.
Evidentiary things. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So I'll actually move to approve the recommended amended language. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Okay, everybody in favor? Aye.
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 Anyone opposed? Okay. It passes. And I think that's the very last of our, that's the last that I have on our recommendations, the commission recommendations. Anybody, did I miss anything? And Judge Riggs, we have yours coming up under the next session or section.
So what happens next with these recommendations? Does
they'll be put into a report. And then, as we were directed, our charge is to present the report to the legislature and to the Commission on Judicial Discipline.
So what's under tab three?
Tab three is the piece of legislation we discussed at the last meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of morphed into what's presented under tab three.
Okay, but is that going to be a recommendation that this commission makes to the legislature to amend?
Yes.
Just as a Perigiri, is that going to be in the BDR? Is that going to be the text of the what will be the new bill or the amended BDR?
Yes, John, as we voted in the last commission meeting, John recrafted the BDR that we had earmarked. And basically, this is what he has come up with for discussion today to make sure that language tracks with what we had discussed at the last meeting. John?
And I've discussed this with LCB. And so the bill that has been pre-filed was the original language that was put forth, but they know that we will at the first hearing be amending to whatever the commission ultimately agrees to.
Okay. So has everybody had an opportunity to look at this?
I had some questions about the language. I was a little bit confused about some of it. And there were things also that seemed that might slip between the cracks the way this is currently drafted. So I'll start with my sources of confusion, which is the language in blue. The commission's jurisdiction with respect to attorney judges begins when the judge is sworn in. That suggests that the commission's jurisdiction with respect to a non-attorney judge begins at some other time. And if so, when is that time?
So what, and I'm not married to any of this, but what I was trying to achieve with that is, because the discussion, as I recall from the meeting, was when is it the state bar and when is it the commission that has jurisdiction, particularly campaign issues associated. So the idea was to provide a line of clear demarcation when the commission's jurisdiction kicks. And then my thought was, since we were silent on lay judges or non-attorney judges, that when they, because there's no disciplinary body before that, that when they become a judge, then the commission obviously has the jurisdiction. But the concern was the sort of line of demarcation between the bar and the commission.
Okay. Well, I'll just give you the benefit of you know, my experience has been looking at what other states do. And of course, it's up to you. I don't have a vote. You guys can decide what's best for Nevada. But in most states, there are no exclusivity demarcations between the jurisdiction of the commission and the jurisdiction of the state bar, or to whomever the state bar has delegated, like a board of overseers or bar counsel or something for lawyer discipline. Instead, it's kind of a concurrent jurisdiction, which would mean that in this situation, for conduct that occurred prior to the judge's assuming office, that the commission would conceivably, if that turned out to be, you know, conduct that calls into question, you know, the fitness of that person to serve as a judicial officer, the commission would have jurisdiction over that. And the state bar, if it occurred while the person was a practicing lawyer, would likewise possibly have jurisdiction over the same conduct. And similarly, if a judge is no longer sitting as a judge and is now a lawyer, the commission would still have conduct over that lawyer who is no longer a judge with respect to conduct that occurred while that lawyer was a judge. And that's kind of not addressed in this language. Another thing that you might consider instead of, you know, it's true you don't want to derogate from the authority of the state bar to impose attorney discipline, but when what some states do is they say that the commission will give substantial weight to relevant decisions of the state Supreme Court and the state bar regarding bar discipline. I don't know whether that's something that resonates with you folks here, but I do think that the idea of kind of exclusivity of jurisdiction with artificial time demarcations can create some problems. And that's why I was concerned when I read this, that there was some lacunae, if you will, in the language.
Yeah, and I think at the last commission meeting, Paul, I had Dan Hoagie from the State Bar address the commission as well, because we were concerned about that period of time while a judge is running for office and commits acts that may be professionally or professional discipline worthy, but the Judicial Discipline Commission doesn't have jurisdiction. So isn't that, Paul, what your concern was when we had Dan here?
You refer to me? I agree. In fact, in Canon 4, Rule 4.1, Comment 2, it goes into specifically, not the time limits, but it goes into specifically who has jurisdiction, either the State Bar, the Commission on Judicial Discipline, or it doesn't reference the Secretary of State, but by virtue of the statutes listed, it is the Secretary of State. So Canon 4 of our Judicial Code does that. But we also have jurisdiction over, as you know, judicial attorneys under Canon 4 who are successful in becoming a judge. So that's the only instance that the Commission on Judicial Discipline has jurisdiction over attorneys for election misconduct is if they become a judge. If they don't become a judge, the State Bar would have jurisdiction. And if they're lay members, the Secretary of State would have jurisdiction.
So that's what we were trying to convey.
But what about non-election conduct? So suppose it transpires that after a person becomes a judge, conduct in which that person engaged that was previously unrevealed while that person was practicing law, that was, you know, fraud or a crime of dishonesty or something that calls into question that person's fitness to be a member of the bar, would that also be something that the commission could consider now in deciding whether that person is fit to be a judge?
Not under the current constitution and our statutes.
Okay.
And as Justice Hardesty mentioned at the last meeting, he gave an example and correct me if I'm wrong, of an attorney improperly taking money out of a trust account or having allegedly abused somebody while an attorney, which was long before ever becoming a judge. Clearly, the State Bar would have jurisdiction in that matter. We would have no jurisdiction as a commission on judicial discipline, since they weren't judges at the time.
Okay. And in a lot of states, the commission would have jurisdiction, even though they weren't judges at the time. But I think that the way you described it with the constitutional limitations, you don't have to address that. Also, the fact that it's the sort of thing that would probably come up in the next election anyway. So.
Yeah, and I guess the question on this too is striking out exclusive jurisdiction, just to make it clear. And we've referenced coextensive. So, John, you had a question as to whether we needed to remove exclusive because we indicated coextensive down below. Is that right?
That was what I was getting at there. Yeah, if exclusive was still there, and also my thought would be that since the commission's jurisdiction constitutionally is over judges, do we really need to say that it's exclusive jurisdiction in the statute?
Just to throw in a flip side, sometimes if two state agencies have jurisdiction, it means that neither does, because they say, this sounds like a judicial commission case that you have. And the commission says, well, this was before, this is really a bar case. And I think there have had to have been informal agreements in the past about who was going to take the lead. So I think the demarcation is helpful to answer the question about that who's got responsibility at one point in time.
And to piggyback, Judge Higgins, that was my understanding of the conversation at the last meeting. So that's what I tried to capture, however inarticulately here.
What other comments? Anybody have any comments on this language?
I think the language appropriately captures what we agreed to at our last meeting regarding this issue.
David?
I'm in the courtroom and the court reporter just came in for 4:40, so I'm gonna go dark for a minute to excuse her from the commission meeting. Excuse me, please.
Okay. Any other discussion? Jim, you think it reflects?
This is Mark, and I just want to make sure what I have, it's very small here, but it looks to me like the word exclusive is stricken. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And thanks, Judge Denton. And with the comment there, is that was just a genuine question for the commission. Do you think we need to strike that? Because this hasn't gone to LCB. So this language, we're not locked in on any of it. So that was just a question for this group. Does exclusive need to be stricken? Do we leave it there? So that was my attempt at getting guidance on that.
My impression was, you're indicating if you strike it, you're still indicating the commission has jurisdiction over the public censure removal. I don't think it makes a whole lot of difference either way, but I think you could strike it.
Mm-hmm.
Thoughts? Jim?
Yeah, I agree with you.
Okay. All right, well then, is there a motion to go with this bill draft? Is there any other discussion or comment?
Motion to approve.
Is there a second? Okay, all in favor? Aye.
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 Anyone opposed? Okay. All right, let's move on. Under item 6. We've got Judge Riggs's proposals under the next tab. And this is referencing her October 14th letter recommendations. Has everybody had an opportunity to look at those? Yes? All right.
And if I may, Justice Caragiri, on these are, we've already discussed these in full, so I'm not going to reiterate that. I just quickly want to indicate that you probably have noticed that I've removed my request for a bill draft request for term limits out of this. And I just want to explain to you all, because I hit on it so hard earlier in our meetings, why I have removed that request. First of all, I think that these recommendations that are now included sufficiently cover the topic matter. And if executed correctly, or the way that they are going to be recommended to the several entities, I think they're going to solve the problem. I also I also want to back up for a second. I've talked to many, many of you. Many of you have given me lots of time for me to hear what you have to say, for you to listen to what I have to say. And I very, very much appreciate the conversation. So thank you for everybody on this panel who's given me their time to listen to my concerns and to let me know what yours are. Again, and also consistent with the fact that we amended our BDR request not to include the request for the term limits. That's, as far as I'm concerned, no longer on the table with my proposal. If anybody has any questions about that, I'm happy to answer them. I did want to bring your attention to a couple things that I would like to suggest amendments on. Item number 2 sufficiently sets out what I think is fair, and that is that Nobody from the commission, including the executive director, should be involved in the decision-making process on who is and is not on the commission. As I read this after it was submitted, however, I note that item three is somewhat inconsistent with that. I think it is. The most important issue is that the commission remains independent of the commission member selection process, but item number three sort of directs the executive director to, you know, to inform the other entities who are the appointing authorities, you know, give them direction on who to, on who they should suggest or who they should nominate. So I'm gonna ask that three be stricken because it's inconsistent with number two, which I think is more important. Also, my other point that I want to make on that is please don't interpret that as me thinking that diversity, equity, inclusion in equity and inclusion is not important for the commission to consider. However, I think it's an overarching consideration that should be considered by the Supreme Court, the governor, and the state bar in their suggestions. And so pinning this on the commission alone, it doesn't seem appropriate at this juncture. So I'm gonna ask that three be stricken. The second amendment that I wanted to make is the last sentence of item four. At the last hearing, Mr. Fisher and had commented that this seems reductive, that it is narrowing the field of persons who could be considered to be on the commission too much. Of course, that wasn't my intention. I want to expand the field, but I think that it's pretty wordy, and I think that I can accomplish the goal of ensuring that the persons who come on the commission have experience with ethical issues is simply by saying that on that second sentence, in addition, the ADKT commission recommends that all appointing authorities seek candidates with exposure to the principles of professional ethics. Simply, I think it's important that persons who come onto this commission have some sort of exposure, you know, not necessarily personal experience, but some sort of exposure to the rules. For instance, Ms. Humphreys, who is one of the governor's appointees, is a former employee of the state of Nevada. She would have had exposure to the Nevada Ethics Commission, or at least be subject to the requirements of the Nevada Ethics Commission. It is not hard in our professional environment to find people who have some sort of exposure to ethics. And in addition, just please recall that the chair and the vice chair of the Nevada Judicial Discipline Commission are governor's appointees. So they're not attorneys who have the professional obligation or judges who have the professional obligation or professional code necessarily. So, you know, given that the two people who are the heads of this commission, given that the persons who are on the entire commission have the ability to remove an elected judge from their job permanently, I do not think it's too much to ask that the people who come on this commission be considered for their ethical experience, even a slight amount. If it's, you know, the last sentence was too reductive, I don't think simply saying that exposure to ethical principles or exposure to principles of professional ethics is too much to ask. So with that, Justice Perigiri, then I would turn it back over to you. And as Judge Higgins indicated earlier, these are simply recommendations to these entities, the commission, as well as to the Nevada Governor, Board of Governors of the State Bar of Nevada, and the Nevada Supreme Court. they can take them or not. But I think that it's appropriate that our commission make these recommendations because going back to the beginning, there are no women attorneys or judges on the permanent panel of the Nevada Judicial Discipline Commission. It's not, you know, I'm not saying that we need to change anybody out who currently is there. What I'm saying is there are no women now, and any women who are subject to discipline are not going to see somebody in that initial process who has their experience in the courtroom environment or in the judicial environment. These proposals simply allow women to be able to be considered or loosen up the process, I guess you would say, to allow more women to be considered for those positions when they open. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And again, that's one of the reasons I brought representatives from the appointing authorities into the last commission meeting, put this on their radar. And I think with your item one and item two, that makes it very explicit what the preference is, this commission's preference. And then going to item four, I appreciate taking out all those qualifications. For me, that was a problem because I did think it was going to overly restrict us. And as we had explained, trying to find members to actually serve is a very difficult thing. So I think that makes it much easier. I would suggest with your recommended language that you just indicated, the ADKT Commission recommends all appointing authorities explicitly seek candidates. I think I would couch it candidates with familiarity with the relevant rules of professional conduct and professional judicial conduct. Because you can have exposure on any number of levels, being the subject of judicial discipline or professional ethics violations. So let me get thoughts on these first number one, number two, and number four with the amended language in number four. Do you want to take these up individually, or do you think we can take them up as a group?
I think we can take them up as a group, but we've gone over them several times.
Okay, then does everybody understand what we would be addressing and voting on? Do we need to make it more explicit?
Are we referring to the item that's October 17, 2022? I just